Next up on the menu is Gary Allen, and he will be reading two pieces called Fat Lady Burrito and Bananas. Now, Gary is Leeds Culinaria's food history editor, and he cooks, eats, dreams, talks, and writes about food. After writing the resource guide for food writers, he edited a book on professional table service, Remarkable Service, for the Culinary Institute of America. He's contributed to articles to Culinary Biographies, Scribner's Encyclopedia of Food and Culture, the Oxford Encyclopedia of Food and Drink in America, for which he was associate editor. Upcoming encyclopedias featuring his work include Oxford's International Encyclopedia of Cheese and the Concise Oxford Encyclopedia of Food and Drink in America. He's currently co-editing with historian Ken Abala an Encyclopedia of the Food Business for Greenwood Press. His latest book, okay, be serious, this is important now. His latest book, The Herbalist in the Kitchen, a reference work on herbs and spices, which is quite good, matter of fact, I saw the galleys, is due next month from University of Illinois Press. Gary Allen, and a good friend of mine.
I suspect this might have to be a little higher. As David told you, I write a lot of dry, factual stuff. I'm not reading that tonight. I'm going to read them in opposite order also. I'm going to read Bananas first. Bananas. Once, back around 1970, I was one of five people on a chartered sailboat in the Leeward Islands. Three, maybe four of us had never been in the tropics before, and we were enchanted by the possibilities that never existed in the frozen climes in which we'd been raised. Fruits were abundant and cheap, so we gobbled up mangoes, dark green-skinned oranges, coconuts, little native limes and bananas. We learned that huge bunches of bananas called hands could be purchased for practically nothing. The prospect was irresistible. We found one that weighed about 150 pounds and lugged it back to the boat. The boat was a 38-foot catch out of Southampton, England, and its galley, of course, was much too small for our prize. Looking around for a convenient spot, one that permitted easy access and allowed us to affect an appearance of casual tropical opulence, we decided to tie it across the stern of the boat. To celebrate, we each ripped off a few bananas and wolfed them down. Over the next few days, we gloried in our good fortune, eating bananas all day long. The tropical sun warmed us and gentle waves rocked us. Life was good. However, the tropical sun that warmed us also warmed the hand of bananas, causing them to ripen quickly. We had to eat faster just to keep up. Sometimes swallowing as many as 15 per person per day. Every day. The gentle rocking of the boat acted to wave the thick scent of the ripening fruit like a perfumed handkerchief, distributing its heady aroma everywhere. Everywhere is not a big place on a 30-foot boat. Even if we crawled hand over hand out to the end of the bowsprit, the stench of bananas was inescapable. All day long, bananas. Our last conscious thought as we rocked her to sleep, on deck or below, bananas. The first thing sensed in the morning, even before we opened our eyes, bananas. There was nowhere we could go to escape the monster we'd unleashed on ourselves. Finally, one of us went astern, a knife in one hand, while squeezing his nose with the other, cut the ropes, slid that oozing, fruit fly-ridden mass over the fantail, and watched its horrid yellowness gradually fade in the boat's wake. Three decades later, bananas have not regained much of their former appeal for me. This next story has a sort of moral. It's that bliss can only be achieved sometimes by willingly courting bodily harm. Fat Lady Burrito. Once, some 20-odd years ago, my wife Karen and I were in San Francisco. For some time, we'd been hearing of the culinary wonders to be found at a place that didn't seem to have an actual name. The main dish, as far as I can remember, also lacked a real name. Both the menu item and the place were simply known to all their adoring fans as the Fat Lady Burrito. We decided it would be a sin to miss such a treat, so on our last day in town, Karen and I walked over to the little shop in the Mission District. And I do mean little. the space for the customers was about the same width as the door and was long enough to fit maybe 8 Mexicans or 5 of me. This was, as I said, a long time ago when I was merely large. Today it would only fit 4 of me. In front of the standing area was a chest-high glass barrier, and behind that was about 3 feet of counter space. Behind that was an aisle exactly one fat lady in width. Then another counter with coolers and jars and bins and such. That last paragraph was bigger than the fat lady's place. We ordered, then watched as she assembled our lunch. She started out by spreading 2 warm flour tortillas side by side on the counter. These were huge, maybe 2 feet in diameter. I've heard since then that these are known as armpit tortillas because they reach from the fingertips of the outstretched arm all the way to, well, you get the idea. If this sort of culinary detail has not put you off your feed, keep listening. She then proceeded to lay out a bed of fillings on each of the tortillas, starting with something that looked like taco meat. On top of that, she spread a layer of beans. After each layer, she would turn and reach into some previously unnoticed cubbyhole for another ingredient. She repeated this process about a dozen times, sometimes fetching cheeses, sometimes peppers, sometimes vegetables. It took a long time because she fit so snugly in the aisle that considerable friction was generated by each ingredient search. I'd watched in awe for nearly 15 minutes, but Karen's attention had already wandered away. I think she feels that if she never finds out what actually goes into cooking a meal, she will never have to do it herself, and so far she's been right. Anyway, by this time it began to look like the fat lady would have to apply for a building permit before she could add anything else to the massive piles before her. Visions of men who build boats in their basements and cannot get them out passed through my mind. She looked at them critically, as if wondering if she'd omitted anything. As she did so, her eyes seemed to lose their focus, or rather, they looked as though they were trying to examine their own retinas. As she slowly twisted her body 90 degrees to the right, I imagined her tiny feet planted firmly on the floor behind the counter, her ankles subjected to incredible torque as her upper body rotated. She raised her hands, forming a bowl that covered her face, and sneezed. She untwisted her body, wiping her hands on her apron as she turned, and her eyes refocused on the burritos before her. Karen didn't notice any of this. The fat lady tapped a bit of the filling into place, making an adjustment too fine for my untutored eyes to detect. Her freshly wiped hands then folded the edge of the tortilla nearest her over one of the piles of assorted ingredients, deftly tucking in the sides, patting and tightening as she rolled, forming a perfectly packed cylinder. She repeated the process for the second burrito. She packed them up, we paid for them, and we carried them out the tiny storefront. Each burrito was a little bit larger than a submarine sandwich, but much heavier. When I bit into it, delicious orange-reddish fat ran down both cheeks. I ate the whole thing. Enough for a family of 4. And probably finished Karen's, as I usually do. The fat lady burrito was everything we'd told it would be, and a little bit more. Not wanting to spoil the moment, I didn't tell Karen about the sneeze until years later, when the statute of limitations had run out.